Very good. So, as usual, I've been busy traveling around the world, at this time to Indonesia, giving lots and lots and lots of talks to thousands and thousands and thousands of people, and having photographs taken and all this sort of some other stuff which you have to put up with as a monk. I've been telling people that I did read in the great Buddhist monument, Borobudur, in central Java. It's being destroyed, it's decaying because the stone is interacting, or rather the flashlights from the many camera shots are interacting with the chemistry of the stone, and the stone is sort of degrading because of too many flash photographs. And it's the same with me. I am decaying because too many flash photographs. But no. Now, one of the talks I gave last on Wednesday night in Singapore, and also gave over somewhere in one of the islands in Indonesia, it was a talk I'm going to give this evening. It's just how that we can not just use Buddhism as a philosophy, but how we can use these teachings to actually to change our own lives and the lives of others. The talk I was giving in Singapore was why relationships go wrong. And it's not just relationships with other people, it's relationships with yourself. And the aspect which I'm going to focus on is the aspect in Buddhism, it's part of the Eightfold Path, called right speech. Because we're really unskillful with the way we talk to each other. And that was emphasized when this morning I read an article, which somebody showed me, about the fact there was a leadership spill in Australia yesterday. And an article from The Guardian in England said they can't believe why in Australia they want to get rid of a government who's had, I think, said 21 years of economic progress, of growth. And you know, when in Europe there's high unemployment, recessions, banks can't pay their bills and stuff like that. And so the article was actually called Whinging Australians instead of Whinging Pops. And it's that which really caught my attention, whinging. And that's really so true. My years of staying in Australia, over 30 years, or almost 30 years now, you see that sometimes the lack of positivity, which I saw when I first came out here, is being replaced by this negativity reflected in the way we speak to ourselves, to each other, to the people, you know, who once we respected. The speech becomes so negative. And that is the cause of so many of our social problems, economic problems too, health problems, and many other problems in our society. So we should learn how to speak properly. Last 2 weeks ago, I said that wherever I go in the world, I always learn another word, you know, in the local language. Over in Indonesia, in Sulawesi, the word is mentok mantong, which is very good in the Sulawesi. In Padang, where they had the big earthquakes a few years ago, it's Lanjapana. That's very good in that part of Indonesia. Over in Bandai Aceh, where they had the big tsunami, where I think 47,000 people were killed, the word was get up tart. So I learn always the word for very good wherever I go, because I want to cultivate good speech, positive speech. So if anyone really hurts me or upsets me or does something wrong in these countries where I go to, I just will not know how to scold them. I just haven't got that vocabulary. Wouldn't it be a wonderful idea in the schools in Australia that we only taught children a positive language? And the word, the bad words we have over here in Australia, what are the bad words? This is interesting, I'm just trying to think of the bad words in Australia, and one doesn't come to my mind because I haven't used them for such a long time. That's honest. Now, don't scold people. What are you calling it? Oh, that's right, Mr. Keating, scumbag. Why do people use such words as scumbag or idiot or fool? It's because we learn that language, and when we learn that language, we also learn the negativity which goes along with it. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we only had a language of positive words? The very good, beautiful. We don't have the word for ugly. We have like a word of thank you. We don't have a word for being ungrateful. We only have a word, you know, for kindness. We don't have a word for ill will. Because when we don't have the language, a lot of times we don't have the mental state which is behind that language. Because when we cultivate a language, we also cultivate our mental state. I learned this a long time ago. When you have an argument with somebody, or rather they're having an argument with you, it's so easy to stop the argument. Because you'll notice when someone is arguing with you, getting angry at you, they start to raise their voice, they start to speak faster and faster and faster, and it excites you and you get really upset. But if you want to calm an argument down, you speak in a low tone and you speak very slowly. And you will find the anxiety and the anger tend to get less and less. I remember this when we bought that land for our nuns' monastery many years ago. It was done by auction. Have you ever been to an auction and know how it works? You know, the auctioneer, they start, this is a one, they do the, you know, the spiel for the land. This is a wonderful piece of land, a beautiful property. It's worth so much more than we're asking for. And we'll start the bid at 50,000. Anyone 50,000, 60,000, 100,000, anyone 100,000, 200,000, 300,000? And you get so excited. And when you get so excited, you don't know what you're doing, and hands are going up all over the place. 200, 300, 400,000. Before you know it, you've spent too much. You see, you can actually understand the power of language to get you excited or to calm you down, to create positive mind states or negative mind states, is very, very powerful. And we should notice that and make use of that more and more in our life. If there's ever an argument going on in your office or in your home, try to control the argument, settle it down through using a low tone and speaking very slowly. It's amazing how you can calm other people down that way. Resist shouting. Resist using high pitch. Resist speaking fast. And then you can calm everybody down. And if that works for others, imagine what it can do for you. If you are anxious about anything, you will find that you will be walking fast, doing things fast. You can see people shaking their feet or having a nervous tic or doing something, fiddling around with something. It's a sign of nervousness. To overcome that nervousness, be mindful, aware of what you're doing, and deliberately slow it down. Do things slowly. Talk to somebody deliberately, slower and slower and slower, and you find automatically that will stop a lot of the anxiety and the unpleasantness. So that speech is very, very powerful, as many psychologists actually know. And if you can cultivate right speech, you will find not only will you be able to be a peacemaker in situations which could, you know, turn out very unpleasant, but also you can use that to yourself to actually to calm yourself down, for yourself to speak slowly and calmly and kindly. And that creates a beautiful sense of kindness and love inside of yourself. We all want to be compassionate and love each other. You know, I don't know anybody, and I've been in prisons talking to murderers and rapists, and goodness knows, these people you think are the worst in the world. I've even spoken to even worse people like politicians. And actually, I saw a few this afternoon, I won't tell you who they were. But, no, they're okay. They're all trying to do their very best. They really want to be kind. They want to do the right thing. But somehow in life, the situations are that we make the wrong choices, or sometimes we're just forced to make those wrong choices in life, and this is what happens. Even bikies. I remember once in the old Fremantle Cemetery that there was a lady I knew from Armidale. Her son was a bikie. And unfortunately, that he slammed into one of the lampposts in the street, going too fast, and killed himself. And you know, she was not really a Buddhist, but interested in Buddhism. So she asked me to go along to the funeral. And it was a bikie funeral. I'd never been to a bikie funeral before. All the guys in leathers and all the girls, you know, like in miniskirts, you know, it was like going to a nightclub, not a funeral. That was just, you know, what they had to wear. And that was a really one of the most interesting funerals I've ever been to in Fremantle Cemetery. So all these guys in their leathers and tats, you know, really sort of people you'd be really afraid to meet sort of on a Saturday night in some dark street in Northbridge. But they were so nice. They came up to me afterwards, these big guys. "Great funeral, sir. Wonderful service, sir." And they all called me, "sir." And these were really nice guys. You get them in the right place and they're fine. So I've never seen in my life, and I have an interesting life as a monk, anyone who doesn't actually like to be compassionate or like a bit of respect. And so it's in there inside of you. How can we make that grow? This is one of the purposes of, you know, the spiritual life. Now, we all know we should be more loving and kind, but how the heck do we do it? And in relationships, it's really so sad. A man and a woman, they want to be kind to each other. They want to love one another. They want to be loved. But why do they keep messing up? And one of the reasons is, of course, the speech. So it's amazing just how you can change a relationship around just by being very aware of what you say and changing that to kind speech, soft speech. Be like me, don't know any word for very bad or stupid or idiot, but know all the different words for very good, beautiful, kind, you know, love, compassion, all those beautiful words. Increase that vocabulary by using it a lot. And then you'll find if you express such beautiful words, you will find your mind becomes beautiful as a result. I'm not saying that these words come from a beautiful mind. I'm saying these words create the beautiful mind. Because every time you say something nice and kind, that just turns your mind, your heart, into being more kind, more loving, more beautiful. It's just conditioning, brainwashing, if you like. So this is why that by cultivating kind and beautiful speech, it is not just for the sake of other people, it is for yourself, for your own growth. And it means there's less problems for yourself. So many people have lack of self-esteem, they don't think they're good enough, they don't think they're beautiful enough, they don't think they're clever enough, they think there's something wrong with them, that somehow or other when they were born something was left out, you know, and it's not covered by the warranty so they can't get it fixed up. No, that is not true. So when you learn how to have this kindness towards yourself, your whole attitude changes. I'm sure I said this 2 weeks ago when I last gave a talk, but it's a great story I'm going to reinforce now. You know, remember the story 2 weeks ago about the two forests? You know, the one forest was a natural forest, old-growth forest, with all the trees crooked, with branches torn off, with scars on the bark and leaves all over the place. It was a mess. Every tree was damaged goods. And the second forest was all the trees were perfect, with all the branches in place, with the leaves, you know, in the right place, all straight in rows and lines, called government plantation. Which one would you rather spend time in? The time with the crooked trees or the government planted and pruned plantation? Which is more beautiful? And everybody says the old growth forest, not the plantation. So if you have a wife who's like a crooked tree, she is much better, more beautiful than this perfect idea of a straight rose and straight trees. If you've got a husband who's damaged goods, beautiful, just like the trees in the old growth forest. You go in those old growth forests, you find one tree which is not damaged. They don't exist. That's why it is beautiful. You find one human being sitting in front of me now, or in Bodhinyana Monastery where I live, or the nuns' monastery, you find me one person who's not damaged. that don't exist. We are all damaged goods. That's what makes us human beings and lovable, just like the old growth forest. So you have a different attitude, and that attitude comes from different speech. And when you have that different speech, you actually build up this much better feeling for yourself. Instead of keep being so critical, which is, you know, what the whinging Australia or the whinging POM or the whinging whatever comes from, you know, we just have positive speech. We take every opportunity to praise somebody. Many of you who have been, you know, coming to my monastery or, you know, hanging around me, and I've just had this sort of joke for the last year or two. I see someone over 70 and I say to them, "Hello, young man." And even today, there's this old Sri Lankan guy came to monastery. I don't know if he's here today. And I said, "Hello, young man," to him. And he almost fell over. But he laughed. What's wrong with saying that? What you're actually saying is actually you're praising, you're encouraging, you're saying something beautiful which they haven't heard, you know, for a long time. Who cares? It may be breaking your precept about lying. But, you know, being young is relative anyway. You know, you're younger than the Buddha when he died. He was 80. So you're still pretty younger than the Pope who retired. So, you know, you still, you can say young man if you like, say young woman. Isn't that nice, beautiful? And people who hear me say that, they like to come again. See, it's good marketing. But it's not just for the sake of marketing. It's there because that little bit of praise or that little bit of nice words which people don't hear, they value that so much. That makes them happy, makes them compassionate. And it makes me happy as well. It makes me more compassionate. So deliberately, over many years, I've cultivated that right speech. Instead of criticizing someone, it's awful to criticize somebody, to call them a bad name. Sometimes they deserve it. They've done something wrong. They've let you down, or whatever it is they've done. But does that really help? Does it really help scolding your husband because he's late from work? Does it really help at all? What do you feel like? You feel terrible because when you send scolding out, you actually hurt your own heart. It's a spiritual downer for you. Your growth is going down. You're decaying spiritually. Every time you blame someone, it's bad for you. And every time you praise someone, every time you're kind to someone, you actually uplift yourself and get a more happy, kind heart. So be selfish. Just think of yourself and tell your wife what a wonderful woman she is. I hope you understand that, because it's going to help you more than it even helps your partner to have that little bit of praise. And it's amazing just how much when you praise people, when you say thank you to them, when you go over the top pointing out their good parts, how much you get back for that. Even economically, it really works. I always remember the time when I was first building Bodhinyana Monastery down in Serpentine. And as you all know, I had to learn how to be builder. And one of the things, the first building we made, I've always really practical, was the toilet block. Forget about halls and forget about huts. You know, I'm very practical. The first thing you need to do every day is have a good place to go to the loo. So that's the first thing we built, was a toilet block. And of course, I had to do the plumbing. I didn't know anything about plumbing, didn't know one end of a toilet system from another, but you had to learn. So what I did, somebody drew up the plans, and I went to this plumbing shop in Perth. And this is exactly what I did. It was almost 30 years ago. I put the plans on the desk and said to the guy behind the counter, "Help. This is what we've got to build. Now, can you help us?" And people are really quite kind. If you ask them kindly, they will sort of spend time helping you. And it's only just a bit of, you know, logic. You know, this is the fat end, this is the small end. You know, the small end goes into the fat end, put a bit of glue on, bung it in, hold it there till it sort of dries. You know, make sure that it has a proper fall, because, you know, it has to go down. You can't get the shit going up the toilet, it has to go down. So, you know, remember the third of a bubble on the spirit level. And it was, you know, quite logical. Once it's explained to you, it's very easy to do. So I did that, did the plumbing for that toilet, but we've been about 28 years now, and it hasn't actually blocked once, actually, the pipes. It's amazing. This is the power of Buddhism. Even to everything flows. You don't get stuck anywhere. Not even the pipes. But anyway, it had to be checked by the local health inspector. And those local health inspectors, they're not Buddhists, they're not kind. They've got a job to do. And they're really strict. And it passed. He said, yeah, it's a good job. And I was just so amazed that it was a good job. And you get in such a good mood when, you know, you do something like that and you get a bit of praise. That I went and I wanted to share that praise. I got the check from the treasurer to actually pay the bill, put it in an envelope, sent it off to this, I don't mind, okay, it's an advertisement, not really supposed to do advertisement in the Buddhist society. It was Galvin's Plumbing, if anyone works for them. And anyway, I sent the check in the post to them with a letter saying to the guy behind the counter was called Fred, and I said, thanks Fred for helping me know how to put these pipes together. It all worked today. The health inspector came and passed it. We've got our toilets. Thank you so much. And I sent it off to the plumbing office. I didn't realize the plumbing office was not just the one shop in Osborne Park. It had many branches all over the place. It was like a big company. So because it was a check, it went to the accounts department. And I found out later, the accounts department opened up the letter with a check and also a letter. Oh God, not another complaint. And when they read it, it was actually a praise. Because usually the only time customers send a letter, you know, to a company is to complain about something. And this was actually praise. So apparently they took it to the head of the accounts department, who looked at it and sent it to the CEO, the manager. And he took a look at that letter. It was praised and got straight on the phone to the branch in Osborne Park. Can I speak to Fred? And it's the big boss who never even saw Fred before. And so Fred gets the message from the big boss. You know, Fred, I just got this letter from one of your customers. I didn't do anything, sir. Nice praise. You did a good job. Oh, thank you. You know, one of your customers has sent this letter saying, thank you. This is what we want in our company. Oh, yeah, I know. We always do that, sir. You're the sort of employee we want. Oh, yes, sir. How much salary are you being paid? Oh, I can always do a bit more. Okay, we'll see about that. You got a raise. And it just happened a few hours later that afternoon. I happened to go in the shop to get another piece of plumbing. I got one which was too small, needed something twice the size and about four times the price. And these, you know, not plumbers are like in Australia. These are really big guys, you know, really wide shoulders and really tough because they have to do all this digging in the mud and grub. So this couple of plumbers were ahead of me in the line, okay? And as soon as Fred saw me, Brahm, come over here. And these two other plumbers had to wait. You know, as I jumped the queue, they were really upset, but you know, Fred was not taking anything from those guys. He said, what do you want? And that's when his mate told me. You know, his mate actually said, oh, Fred's wife has come in, you know, pointing to me. You know, basically someone who was kind to him. And then they told me what had happened that morning. You know, he got a personal call from the CEO and a rise. And of course he was so happy with me. And so I said, what do you want, Brahm? I said, look, I've got this pipe, it's too small. He said, oh, come round the back. And I said, look, there's a big sign there, no customers allowed behind the back. That doesn't apply to you, come behind the back. He took me round the back, and he got the, you know, the part I needed, you know, helped me out. And, you know, it was, again, twice the size, four times the price. I said, oh, what's the difference? I always remember him smiling and saying, the difference for you, Brahm, is nothing. Take it away. And so he gave me this part really cheaply, you know, when I just exchange it. Just that little letter, that little act of praise and kindness made so much difference. It made me happy. I told that story many times. It's made many other people happy. So why can't we just develop this kinder, more beautiful speech? If any of you have problems in your relationship, in your marriage, just take a recording. You can get your partner's permission for this. Get a recording of one day's speech between the two of you. That's as long as you're on speaking terms, that is. But if you are speaking to each other still, record what you say to each other and play it back between both of you. And just get a sheet of paper, you know, two sides, one side praise, one side criticism. And just see how many praises you make in one day and how many criticisms. And just doing that, you realize why relationships don't last. Oh, criticisms. You hardly ever say anything nice to each other. And that not only says why relationships fail, it also why people have psychological problems like depression, like lack of self-esteem, you know, physical problems like cancer. We're so negative. The way we speak, that goes into our heart, goes into our lives, and we become sick. The body gets negative as well. And that's why I haven't been sick for years. Because, you know, I was kind to my body and positive. Yeah, I get tired. I really should have been sick going to Indonesia because I was doing about two flights every day, going all across the islands. And at night time, as Mr. President knows, because I emailed him, it was just so hot. And the air cons were not made for Westerners. They never got below 27 degrees. And it was really hot at night. But nevertheless, you survive just about. So anyway, so if you've got a good attitude, you don't complain so much, you find that you know you're far more healthy. Why is that? Because that little bit of praise which you give to yourself not only creates this beautiful, happy feeling in a family, it creates a happy feeling in your own heart. So you can understand where a lot of sickness comes from in this life and why a lot of social disease as well, from a simple cause of bad speech. It takes a lot of training to say something nice. Sometimes you have to force yourself at first. You know, grit your teeth when you say to your husband, "Husband, you're such a wonderful husband. I've got to say this." But maybe first of all you have to grit your teeth, but after a while you get used to it and you can relax when you're saying something nice. And it becomes much more fun. Everybody likes praise. And if you give praise, it works. As I said so often, with your kids, for goodness sake. Why do kids misbehave? Again, just get that recording of how you speak to your kids. How many times a day do you say something nice to your kid? And how many times do you scold them, correct them, tell them they're late, they're not doing enough homework, their rooms aren't tidy enough, not this, not that? And if you actually realize what you're doing, you understand where a lot of problems come from with children. When they go to school, unless they're top of the class, the teacher says, "You can do better." "But I came second, sir." "But you can do better." Gee, if you're not, you know, if you come second, you get criticized. How about when you come sort of last or bottom? Okay, you've heard this story before, but I love telling this story. When I was a school teacher, one of my children did come bottom. Of course one child has to come bottom. Even a class of 30 Albert Einsteins, one will have to become bottom of the class. But you know what the nature of our society is? I'm bottom of the class means I'm a loser, I'm hopeless, I'm useless. And you get depressed. So when I gave out the report cards at the end of the year, I saw this one kid. It's the first time he found out he came bottom. And he looked so depressed. And you could see from his face, after depression was fear. When he started, you don't need to read your mind, read facial features. They'll tell you everything what's going on inside the kid's mind. Worried about what his parents would say that night. How he'd be scolded, have to give up this privilege and that privilege, and if you don't work hard and do better next year, you'll be in worse trouble. You know, a kid catching that from his parents, he was terrified. So I went up to him, because I will not stand by when somebody is having such a hard time. I'll always go and help them. So I helped them by praising him for becoming last. And you know how I did that? Because Buddhism has got all these amazing little tricks. That's why Buddhism and mental health and even medical health. They're coming together now. A great assistance, the mental health and the medical well-being, physical well-being of human beings. So I told him about the Buddhist concept of the Bodhisattva. If you look at the Buddhist books, you come across this word, Bodhisattva. It's a Sanskrit word. And what it refers to is someone who sacrifices their own happiness for the sake of someone else, even gives their life for the sake of and happiness of other beings. The Bodhisattva, the sacrificer. And they're really well respected in Buddhism. If you go to the Chinese temple in Guildford Road, you see there are statues of Bodhisattvas where people worship these Bodhisattvas. So I said that, you know, you kid who came bottom of the class, you are Bodhisattva. You deliberately sacrificed yourself by becoming bottom of the class. So none of your friends will have to suffer what you're going to get from your parents tonight. All of your friends, they just think about themselves. But you deliberately chose to take this terrible position of 30th in a class of 30, just out of compassion for all your friends in this class. I am going to suggest to the headmaster that this year you get Bodhisattva of the Year prize in this school. And even bottom of the class, you could find something to praise. So when I did that, I must admit, because there's a few school teachers here, if you try that technique, you must always add that in Buddhism, you're only allowed to get Bodhisattva prize once. Next year, let someone else get that prize. But what it was doing, it was actually praising even somebody who sometimes you feel it's hard to praise. And if I can do that, I felt happy doing that. That kid started laughing. You know, I think he thought I was crazy, but he laughed. It broke him out of his depression. So even though people who do get depressed, they come up to me and said, "Oh, you're so lucky to be depressed." I praise them for being depressed. And they think that's really weird. How can you praise? Depression is an illness. How can you praise an illness? Illnesses have many benefits. You don't have to go to work on a Monday morning. You can lay in bed. You can watch the TV. And all the people give you special privileges. So if you're depressed, they want to cheer you up, so they make you food you know you're supposed to like. So if any of you do get depressed, please milk it for as much as you possibly can. Now you can see what I'm saying here. Just the attitude which you have, which is often comes out through speech, and the speech reinforces that attitude, can change the whole dynamics, you know, of whatever's happening. Whether it's disease, if you welcome the disease, "Oh great, I've got cancer, yes!" Can you do that? You've got no choice, you've got the cancer. The only choice you have is how you react to it. This is a great thing we know in life. A lot of life you can't control, but one thing you can always control is your attitude, your reaction to the events in life which come to you unexpected, unwarranted. You know, they just come and you can't really do anything about it, except look after your attitude and have a praising attitude. Even speak nice words. Even if you say, "Oh no, I've got cancer," that makes the cancer worse. If you say, "Yes," then cancer's got no chance. Be careful. This is actually really heavy, deep stuff. But it's very powerful. It does work. Your speech is a reflection of your mind. Your mind creates the speech. The two work in synergy together. Which is why cultivating right speech is not just for harmony with other people, for having a good relationship. It's also for your own spiritual health and well-being and your growth as a person. If you keep on whinging to others, complaining about the government, complaining about the traffic, complaining about the weather, complaining about life, complaining about the government, complaining about God, complaining about Buddhism, complaining about the monks, everything sucks, then you're going to die. You're kidding yourself. It doesn't work. That's why if anybody gets angry or negative to you, when you understand this, they call you a pig, they call you stupid. The old saying that says much more about them than it says about you is so true. Anyone who's negative, what they're negative about is nothing to do with it. It says a lot about their spiritual well-being and their spiritual health. People who are spiritually sick, and unfortunately there's a lot of people like that around today, are always so negative, always putting things down, always seeing the worst possibility, never giving others the benefit of the doubt. I just saw this when I was over in Indonesia. I was checking some emails from here. You know, you can see a poster in the reception area here, Ajahn Brahm for sale. And that is this fundraiser. I'm doing this for the nuns' monastery. Because Dharmasara nuns' monastery, they've got a building to build. And it's always the case. A lot of times the Asians especially, they give a lot of money to monks. But to nuns? No. I don't know why you do. You should be ashamed. You know, a monk's monastery, yeah, you can give thousands. Nuns' monastery, well, you know, not nuns. And even for the Asians, the Buddha said this. It's in the. This is, for those of you who say, well, Ajahn Brahm just speaks, you know, he makes it up himself. This is actually from the suttas, from the Kama Vibhanga Sutta, that, no, what's it? No, Dakana Vibhanga Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya. The greatest gift you can give, as far as making merit is concerned, getting good karma back from your bucks, the biggest bang for your bucks, is giving to monks and nuns' monastery together. That's the best. You can't do better than that. So don't just give to the monks, give to the nuns as well, okay? That's the best. That's what the Buddha said. But because it's so hard to raise funds for the nuns, that's why we have all these amazing fundraisers. And the fundraiser, we're auctioning this and auctioning that. Actually, you know what happened when I came back from Indonesia? I live in a cave. And, you know, it was hot in Indonesia. It was cool last night, many of you may know. I don't know, it was 13, 14 degrees last night. So I was in my cave. I went to sleep because I was really tired. I woke up about 11:30 and I reached over for my blanket. My blanket wasn't there. Someone has taken it to auction it. It's true. It's gone. That was cold last night. Everything I've got, they're auctioning it off. So I'm going to hold on to my robe tonight and just make sure I've got something to wear tomorrow morning. But anyway, just as a joke, I said, why don't you auction me? And a lot of jokes, you say it's a joke, but then you start thinking about it afterwards. That's interesting. So, you know, I'm auctioning myself 7 days anywhere in the world to the highest bidder. You know, as long as it's doing something reasonable, you know, within limits. So it's a wonderful, like, sacrifice. I'm going to teach a meditation retreat or teach Dhamma somewhere, do something useful for the world. And some people on, you know, internet blogs are complaining. You can't do this. This is not Buddhism. You know, this is disrespectful. This is, and I thought, oh, crikey. That says so much about the people complaining. Some people are so negative. You try and do something good and beautiful, and you still get criticized for it. And I say that says so much about the people who write those blogs, much more than anything else. And there are people like that negative. Those negative people, they won't live very long. I'm not doing this, you know, as a threat. I'm doing this as just cause and effect. You know, negativity just destroys the body, for goodness sake, and destroys the mind and spiritual life as well. So all that sort of negative stuff, which we, especially the way we speak or the way we write. So please, whenever you're writing, they have this saying, if you cannot improve upon the silence, shut up. It's a beautiful saying. If you can't improve upon the silence, then be quiet. And that means not writing as well. Because sometimes that, you know, we react and afterwards we regret it. We should have remained silent. The more you speak, the more chance there is of you putting your foot in the mouth. It's just probability theory. So if you speak less, then you're liable, you know, not to get into so much trouble. And if you do speak, please speak kindly to other people. to create a kinder and happier world. When I was in Indonesia, there was many Muslims coming to my talks. I was so impressed that, you know, it's a majority Muslim country, that many Muslims were actually, you know, on the stalls selling my books, greeting people as they came in, having photographs with me. I never forget this one girl as I came into the airport in Banda Aceh. She came up to me wearing a veil. "Ajahn Brahm, are you Ajahn Brahm?" Because my books are really bestsellers in Indonesia. "Ajahn Brahm, you really Ajahn Brahm? Oh, can I take a photo with you?" She's a Muslim girl. She was so excited. It's wonderful. You managed actually to touch people of other religions as well. So maybe in those talks in Indonesia, maybe 30% of people were Muslims as well. And how does that happen? It's because when you speak kindly, with respect, to all religions, to all people, no matter who they are, no matter what gender, no matter what race, what religion, what sexual orientation, of course, people want to hear more. It's a growth. So you can use speech to divide, or you can use speech to bring people together. And that's a skill which you can develop, which I developed. And of course, one of the questions I was asked, you know, and it's a sensitive question. I forget where that was. I think it might have been in Makassar, in Sulawesi. They asked me, "So what do Buddhists believe about God?" Now that's a sensitive issue in Indonesia, when half the, maybe a third of the audience are Muslims, and a few Christians in there as well. And how do you make an answer which is right speech, which is kind, harmonious, but also truthful? It's so easy to make that answer. Because, you know, I've developed right speech by developing right relationships with many, many people of different religions. Last week, you know, Ajahn Brahmani went off to a Commonwealth Day service in St. George's Cathedral, because I was over in Indonesia. So, you know, the Dean of St. George's, John Shepherd, has given two talks here, I think, and Roger Herf, the Archbishop, who's a really good friend. You know, they both sent their best wishes to me. And apparently that John Shepherd said the only thing wrong with Ajahn Brahm is that he went to the wrong college in Cambridge, because John Shepherd went to another college. So, you know, we're friends, we have fun together, we just crack jokes together. And so that is how we have some harmony. But one of my other mates, who unfortunately was about to give a talk here on one range retreat, but he actually died, and that was Abbot Placid, the abbot of the monastery in New Norcia. Now, he died a few years, 2 years ago now. They've got a new abbot now, Abbot John. These are really good friends with the monks. We go up to their place once a year. They go up to come to Bodhinyana Monastery once a year. These are Catholic monks. We are so friendly that I was really thinking, I think I told this joke last time, really thinking of applying for the vacant position of Pope. But apparently I'm too late. It's already filled. Because I thought, wouldn't it be a wonderful idea? Wouldn't it be like a great gesture of interfaith harmony to have the Pope as a Buddhist monk? I like thinking outside the box because there's something true in that, something good in that. Of course, it never happened, but it would have been wonderful. And, you know, in return, you know, we could have the spiritual director of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia as a Catholic. Interesting idea, isn't it? Anyway, of course, we get the whole Vatican, they just get the small place, so it's a good deal. But anyway, let's go back to the story. Okay, so I was giving this seminar over in UWA, at a chaplain's conference, sitting next to Abbot Placid, the two of us were co-presenting, and I think many of you know Father Frank Brennan. He's a very well-known Catholic. I think he was in charge of the trying to get a human rights charter in the Australian Constitution. So he put his hand up and asked a question, you know, what is the Buddhist idea of God? And I knew this was, you know, this was not sort of some dummy. This is a highly educated, intellectual, you know, a leading thinker in Australian society asking a tough question. And this was the answer I gave in Indonesia. I said, look, this guy sitting next to me, Abbot Placid, I've known him for such a long time. He's a close friend. Because I cultivate friendships outside of Buddhism as well. Otherwise, I get too narrow-minded. So he's a close friend of mine. And he has this fundamental belief. He keeps on telling me, I've heard this so many times, that everybody, all human beings, are searching for God. Now, you could reject that straight away and say, no, there is no God. Science says there is no God. Buddhists believe there is no creator God. That might be true, but that's not right speech, because it creates divisions. So let's have a bit more innovative right speech, which creates harmony. So I said, this guy has been saying that everyone is searching for God. So what do people in this room and on the internet, what are you searching for? Why do you come here? In life, what are you searching for? You're searching for love, for someone to care for you and to know how to care for yourself. You're searching for respect. You know, you may be in a community, whether it's a racial community which is not given a fair go, or a sexual orientated community like gays or lesbians, which still aren't given equality, especially in things like marriage. We want respect, we want love, we want compassion, you know, we want happiness, we want peace. So if that's what you're searching for, I say, and this guy says everyone is searching for God, that must be what God is. End of problem. And when I said that, all the Muslims were clapping, all the Buddhists saying, yeah, that's a good answer. And so straight away, it was right speech which created harmony, which didn't criticize or put down another person's beliefs, but took them to a different level to create peace and harmony and understanding between people. And that's actually how we use right speech. Negativity is saying, you are wrong. It's wrong speech. Because it just creates divisions, it creates ill will. It doesn't create truth when you say you're wrong. How many times has someone said you're wrong? They just haven't understood you. They haven't understood what you meant. Haven't seen the big picture. It's not about right and wrong. It's about peace, harmony, kindness, love. That is right. So then we understand to how this right speech goes to a different level. And you know it's gone to a different level. You know it's right speech because it makes you feel good. It raises you spiritually and it raises everybody else. It creates greater harmony and peace in this world. So never ever diminish another person's religion, even if you don't understand it. Never diminish another person's sexual preferences and orientation. You just don't understand. Never diminish another person's views because they see things different than you. If you do that, you are diminishing yourself. There was a saying of the Emperor Asoka, first emperor of the whole of India. He was a Buddhist. He left these inscriptions in stone. He said, anyone who censures or complains about another person's religion only succeeds in defaming his own faith. It's a beautiful saying. You know, if you criticize another's religion, you're only criticizing your own understanding. It says more about you than the thing you're criticizing. And that's what we mean by right speech. So if you want to grow as a human being, and if also at the same time you want to create some peace and harmony in this world, if you want to have a happy relationship and a person you really can share your life with instead of always being afraid it's not working, we're going to split up. And if you want to have kids who love and respect you and who grow, be careful how you speak. Speak in kind ways, never criticizing, never scolding, never saying you're wrong, you're bad, you're terrible. See if we can get those words out of our vocabulary and replace it with the positive words, the very goods. As I said 2 weeks ago, my favorite very good is in Cantonese. Remember what that word is I said 2 weeks ago? Great place to end this talk. The word for very good in Cantonese in Hong Kong is ho ho ho. Thank you for listening. Sadhu. Otherwise, ho, ho, ho. Okay, so now we can have some questions. Oh, questions on the internet, first of all. Here we go. Question one. This is only from Bunbury, Geraldton, Sri Lanka. Okay, not quite international except from Sri Lanka. Question one. I'm unable to look after my parents the way they would like me to. This makes me feel guilty, as I once read that not looking after our parents is bad karma. Please advise me. It's not looking after your parents the way they would like you to, because we never get what we like in the world. Suffering is asking from the world what it will never be able to give you. And you know, you can't sort of give your parents everything they would want, as well as giving your partner everything that he wants, and your kids and your work and your life, everything which you need as well. So we always have a balance. So number one, Kanchana from Bunbury, lower your expectations. And please ask your parents to lower their expectations too. Lower their expectations to fit what is possible in our modern world. In the old days, you know, the kids and the parents would live in the same village. And if they did move, it was just to the village a couple of miles away. And now families are separated by incredible distances, and it's impossible, no, literally impossible, to look after your parents the way they could be looked after in the old days. And of course, that was with me too. My mother lived in London, I lived over here in Perth, and the last few years of her life, especially when she had dementia, I just couldn't visit her as much as I would really want to, or should have done. Fortunately, I had a really good brother who did that service for me. And I said, look, you know, please you look after our mother. I'm looking after many thousands of other people. I'm sure my mother would be proud of what I'm doing. Actually, she was. So please, Kanchana, lower your expectations to what is possible. And it is important to look after your parents, but not at the expense of everything else in life. You have to look after your own health, look after your own family, you know, your husband, your kids, your brothers and sisters, your work, your livelihood, your health, there's so many other things to look after. So you don't focus on one thing, Kanchana. Take this broad view, put everything in the weighing machine and just see what you can do right now. And if you can't do as much as you can, praise yourself for what you have done. Again, we can always be so negative. Oh, I should have visited my mother more. Oh, I should have sort of looked after her more when she was in the old people's home for dementia. But I don't think like that. I think I actually did visit her a couple of times. I remember what I did do, and I praised myself for that. Going a long distance, getting very tired. You notice how busy I am. You know, I don't have holidays, except for 2 weeks a year when I stay in my cave. But so I work really hard. So that was very tiring. Finding time to go visit my mother last October before last time she was saw her alive. Very tiring, but I'm very proud of doing that. So praise yourself for what you have done. And stop criticizing yourself for what you could not have done anyway. So when you change the way you speak, then you change the way you think, and then you won't feel so depressed, and you won't feel that you failed. You feel you succeeded. You've done so much. And fellow Jack from Geraldton. My son isn't doing well in maths at high school, and I've heard your story before, but I'm very worried about his future. He came home today with news he got 12 out of 50 for a test. I've been saying he needs to improve. He doesn't do much study as he doesn't like maths. How do I handle this? I remember this one story of this guy who had a kid who couldn't do mathematics. He got him a tutor, still didn't work. You know, he threatened him with losing his privileges, that didn't work. Finally, you know, what really worked, he sent him to a Catholic school. And a few months later, his grades really went up in maths. And his father was so impressed. He asked him, why was that? Was it because of the extra discipline in the Catholic school? He said, no. Was it because they were great at better teachers? He said, no. What was the cause of you doing so well in maths when you went to Catholic school? He said, because when I went through that door of that Catholic school, When I saw that boy nailed to the plus sign, I realised they were serious. Oh, I'm going to get into trouble for that, but I don't care. You know, the guy nailed to the plus sign, he thought it was. So I couldn't resist that. I couldn't resist that joke. I remember reading the biography of Richard Branson, and he was terrible at maths. He just couldn't do maths. And I remember him saying he got cane for it at a school in England. And he became this incredible, inspirational, multi-millionaire entrepreneur and businessman. So, Jack from Geraldton, that may be the future of your kid, the next Richard Branson. But he said it was actually the way that maths was taught. Now, his mind couldn't figure out, you know, 1 + 1 or 2 + 2. But if it was £1 and £1, he knew that was £2. He just needed something more solid and less abstract. And it's because of that I remember, because I do read psychology articles. There was one lady in Canada, I forget the article now because it was about a year ago, she had the same problem with mathematics. It was actually part of the brain which hadn't developed. It wasn't her fault. And when she actually found out, you know, that her brain wasn't, she actually did some research. Why was this big block? She was smart at everything else, but just could not do mathematics. And she did some research, found there was many other people like her. And she developed these exercises for her, which worked. And then she ended up with this a first-class degree in sort of biology or something from a big unit, McGill, I think it was, in Canada or someplace like that. And she realized it was nothing wrong with the boy or the girl. It was the brain was a bit different than others and just needed exercises, just like you have a weak arm because of some physical abnormality. You could exercise it, special exercises, which she developed, and it worked so much, so well, that she spread it to other people, started a company, and basically many other kids who cannot do maths, it's not they're not trying. It's not that they don't want to. They just can't. Because they need different types of teaching methods. And I was very impressed with that article because a lot of times there are some kids, they say they don't like it, it's because they can't do it. That's why they don't like it. Because every time they get low marks, they get criticized. Of course you don't like doing something which you keep losing and failing at. You know, if you like doing sport, like soccer or like tennis, if you're good at it, if you're good, that's, you like it then. Which comes first? You like it and you're good, or you're good and you like it? Sometimes the two go together. So it may be that your son is not doing well in maths, not because he doesn't like it, but because he thinks he can't do it. Then he doesn't like it. So, I would actually just praise your kid for getting 12. It's much better than 10. Well done, yes! Until he gets praised, and then he likes maths. It may be a bit late now, because this is a problem with our education system. We don't praise kids enough, which means if they don't do well, they feel they can't do a subject. They can't do history. They feel they're failures at these subjects. And once that's in your mind, you know what it's like. If you think you can't do it, of course you can't do it. And all it really needs is say, yeah, you can do it. Yes, 12, that's really good. Now that's, you know, you've got 12 things right out of 50. That's excellent. You know, just you know, see if you can get another 12 things right next time. But you're really good. You're getting somewhere. Well done. Encouragement, prizes, whatever it is, will encourage the kid. Yes, you can do it. I remember again, a story when I was a school teacher. I was teaching maths. And I was told by the former teacher, there was one kid in my maths class. It's not the whole class. It's just my maths class in 1 year. Who came bottom of the class a year before. Someone who couldn't do maths. And I was just experimenting. And I want to find out whether there is such a thing as I can't do maths, I can't do history. So I singled out that one kid in the class, you know, who came bottom the year before. After every class, or maybe during the class, I'd go up to his desk and ask him, did you understand this? You know, any problem with it? I was really encouraging him. I spent more time with that kid than any other kid in the class. It was unfair. But I was doing an experiment to see if I could encourage him, giving extra positive energy, extra time, to see what would happen. It worked better than I'd ever expect. He came top that year. I took him from the bottom to the top, and all it was encouragement and extra time. Spending time with the guy and say, yeah, you can do this. Well, this is how it's done. Oh, yeah, I see now. And it worked. So sometimes you can have a tutor, but if that tutor is negative and doesn't encourage, doesn't know how to motivate, the kid will never do it. He needs motivation, encouragement, because literally I do not believe, from my own experiences, anyone who can't play Beethoven's Fifth if they put their mind to it. I don't see anyone who can't understand quantum physics if they put their time on it. It's just, you can do anything, basically. The Buddhist law of karma says that. You can do anything. It might be a bit difficult for one person than the other, but you can do it. So there is no person in this world who can't do maths. I just, you know, may take a bit longer, need a bit of encouragement, but yes, you can. Obama, yes, we can. I know he didn't, but you know, it's a good slogan. Okay, last question from Sri Lanka. Dear Ajahn Brahm, I have lost many of my friends the past year due to relationship issues, and the university has become not so much fun anymore. Can you advise? Easy. You're so lucky to have lost all these friends. You're so lucky that the university is not so much fun anymore. Because if it's not so much fun, which means you can spend more time doing the studies. You don't have all these friends, you know, to actually distract you. You can be like a monk, be in solitary, and be really go far. So in other words, whatever you do, praise it. Find a way of turning it into something positive. And you can do anything. Anything can turn to be positive. You know the shit simile, shit is fertilizer. What else is really wrong? Sickness. Sickness is a time when you can allow other people to be kind to you. You know, you're creating employment for doctors and nurses when you're sick. It's a great benefit to the economy. what else is this? Oh, yeah, dying. Dying is a wonderful thing you can do. The world is overpopulated. That's one less person. You're lessening the greenhouse gases when you die. So it's a great, wonderful thing you do for others. So what? Whatever happens in life, you can always see something positive in anything. And when you get that positive mind state, then, okay, you lost many of your friends. You'll find them again. They're hiding somewhere. I know I lost my watch a few days ago, and I found it somewhere. So I don't know where you lost your friends. They probably sort of left them in the shopping mall or something. No, you'll find more friends. So, but if you get miserable, dinner one from Sri Lanka, if you get negative, not only have you lost friends, you won't find any more. So please, keep a positive attitude towards these things and you will find more friends. There's lots of friends around. People like having friends. So, you know, you can be someone who's a friend of someone else. It's not you getting friends, it's allowing other people the great privilege of being your friend, dinner one. So just be happy, let go of all those things. Lost some of your friends in the past year due to relationship issues. Learn about relationships. Make it even better next time. Whenever you lose, that means I've got to go. I am going over time today. So yes, so keep a positive attitude. And remember, if with relationships, speak well. So don't go around sort of saying bad things about other people because that brings you down. That kills your spiritual life. Negative speech. Okay, so anyone got anything to say about any other questions for this evening? You got the microphones. I asked the microphones to to be actually carried by fit, young, healthy sprinters instead of these old people which usually get carry the microphone on a Friday night. Takes them forever to get to someone else. And I think they'll probably pass away and die before they get to the question. No. Going. Going, oh, you don't get a chance for exercise. Okay, you guys. Okay. It's past 9 o'clock, so it's a good time to finish. So thank you all for listening tonight.